Chapter 1. It was pouring rain when Shane got off the Catalina Express. Good news for the island, and bad news for him. He hadn't brought rain gear. They were in the middle of a drought, after all, and the decision to spend Christmas on Catalina had been an impulse. An impulse he was never going to hear the end of, judging by the way his phone had been ringing ever since his plane landed at LAX. As he rolled his luggage down the slick walkway, past the tennis courts and the bronze statue of the sea lion, known as Old Ben, it began to ring again. Shane swore, yanked his suitcase to a halt, fumbled for his phone. He scowled at the image of his older brother Shiloh on the wallet-sized screen, and answered with a forbidding, "Agent Donovan."
"Don't try to pull that G-Man act with me," Shiloh said. "Where the hell are you?"
"Avalon."
"I thought we all agreed that was a bad idea. I thought we all agreed you would spend Christmas recuperating at Mom's."
"You all agreed. I said I was spending Christmas on Catalina. I'm sticking to that plan."
"That plan is a no-go," Shiloh said. "You should be home with your family during the holidays, not hold up on your own. Does that cabin even have electricity?"
"It's a beach cottage, and of course it has electricity."
"The last thing you need is to sit around brooding."
"I'm not brooding."
"Well, you should be. This is no way to treat your mother."
Shiloh was sort of joking, and sort of not joking.
"Not kidding, Shay. The first Christmas, the three of us have all been home at the same time in how many years? And you decide this is the year you have to celebrate solo?"
Shane watched the breakers roll in and crash against the brown and gray rocks along the wharf.
The spray flew up, glittering like ice crystals against the bleak sky. "I just need a little time to myself right now."
"You live alone," his brother said without sympathy. "How the hell much me time do you need? This is crazy. You're just out of the hospital. You should be here letting Mom and Sydney wait on you hand and foot, which is what they're dying to do."
"Sid is about as eager to wait on me hand and foot as you are. Besides, I don't need anyone waiting on me. I'm perfectly fine. I just need a couple of days to think things through."
"Negatory," Shiloh said. "Thinking things through is the last thing you want to do right now, little brother."
"See, using your brain is not that dangerous when you practice regularly."
"The comedian of the family. Do they even have a medical facility on that island?"
Shiloh was a Navy SEAL. For him, the entire world was one big rescue operation waiting to happen.
"Of course. It's a vacation resort, not a frontier outpost. And even if they didn't, it's only about 40 minutes from Los Angeles if I did need a medical facility, which I don't and won't."
"You've got 52 staples in your gut."
"No, I don't. The staples were removed last night. And they weren't... Anyway, I didn't steal another patient's clothes and sneak out, you know. The hospital released me."
"Believing that you were going to be staying with your family, recuperating at home."
Annoying, because it was probably true.
"I'll be able to rest and relax better here. I brought a couple of books I've been meaning to get to, and there's plenty of food at the cottage. I'll be eating, sleeping, and reading. I won't be brooding, okay? So, can we just leave it at that?"
He spoke so forcefully, a pelican threw him a look of reproach and took flight. There was a rather loud silence on the other end. Then,
"Hey, it's nothing to be ashamed of,"
Shiloh said, way too solicitously.
"This kind of thing happens to a lot of guys. In your line of work."
"Probably."
"Yeah, that's really funny," Shane said. "I'm laughing so hard, my 52 stitches are about to split open again." "Which is why you should get your butt on that ship, sail back to Los Angeles, and catch the first flight home."
"Ha ha. Love to Mom and Sid. I'll talk to you in a couple of days. Shane disconnected. That was pretty much the only way to get the last word with either of his siblings. He was a little irritated, but reluctantly smiling, as he continued on his way, the black suitcase bumping noisily across the wet cement and then over the uneven brick walk. The rain peppered down. The white Christmas? No. The wet Christmas? It was looking that way. Hopefully the cottage roof didn't leak. Palm trees were strung with Christmas lights, and the shop and cafe windows were frosted with fake snow. He'd never been to the island this late in the year. During the summer, the island hosted nearly 1 million tourists, but the year-round population was more like 4,000. This morning, it was startlingly quiet in Avalon. It could have been any little fishing village along the California coast, except Catalina's economy was nearly 100% tourist-based. By the time he reached Clarissa Avenue, he was drenched with a combination of rain and perspiration, and feeling ridiculously weak. So much so that he was almost rethinking his decision to spend the holiday on his own. That was what 7 days in the hospital did to you. Or maybe it was what nearly getting killed did to you. When he saw a lamp was on in the white cottage across the way, his heart skipped a beat. It was funny. Now, even after 2 years, the sight of light in those windows still got to him. Plenty of holiday makers had rented that cottage since Norton, but Shane still thought of it as Norton's place. Which was just... He shook his head, hauled his suitcase up the short walk to his front door, and hunted for his keys. The cottage had been built in the 1920s, and though there had been extensive renovations in the 1990s, those had mostly, and wisely, revolved around the plumbing. The narrow doors, drafty windows, and slightly rickety second-story deck were all original. Wet dripped from the eaves, the occasional cold raindrop finding its way down the back of his neck. At last, Shane had the door open. He dragged his suitcase inside. The cottage was cold and dark. It smelled stale, damp, unwelcoming. The last time he'd made it down from San Francisco had been April, 8 months ago. He still flew in as often as he could, still liked diving these waters with their towering kelp forests, sunken ships, and wrecked planes. But he didn't have a lot of free time these days. His side twinged in unpleasant reminder. No matter how clear the water or abundant the marine life, he wouldn't have been doing any swimming or diving this trip, even if the weather had been less ominous. He opened the blinds, left the door open to air out the cottage, and wheeled his suitcase across the tile floor to the short staircase. He hadn't brought a lot with him, but even so, the effort of hauling his suitcase from the pier to Crescent Avenue and then up Clarissa Avenue had him feeling alarmingly weak. He left the suitcase at the bottom of the steps and went into the small guest bathroom, pulled up his sweater, and studied the neat white dressing over his abdomen. The pristine bandage still looked securely fastened. No blood, no seepage, so hopefully no damage done. He dragged his sweater down. The man in the bathroom mirror, close-cropped dark hair, gray-green eyes, grimaced. It had been a sword 2 years ago, too. Of course, that time he'd merely been suspected of stealing it. No one had actually tried to run him through. Tried? It had been more than a try, though not the fatal wound Ephraim Schrader had hoped to inflict. Shane was lucky. Lucky to be alive. Lucky not to be out of action permanently. As in, a couple of centimeters lucky, according to the doctors. No wonder he felt like he had a lot to think about. It wasn't that he'd lost his nerve, which was probably what Shiloh thought, but he did feel... Well, the truth was, He hadn't felt this let down since that whole fiasco 2 years ago. Which was strange, because a near-death experience ought to have the opposite effect. And he had been, was, grateful and relieved to be alive and in one piece. But then this weird depression had settled on him. The sense of loss. He didn't even know why. There was no reason for it. He had a job he enjoyed, and was going to be able to resume reasonably soon. A nice home, a vacation cottage, family that loved him, friends that put up with him. But more and more, he felt like something was wrong. No, like something was missing. Maybe, probably, it was simply reaction to nearly dying. That would be normal. Expected. Guys who were shot went through something similar. True, getting stabbed with an antique rapier did cast a certain shade of absurdity on the proceedings, as in, he was going to be kidded about unfortunate fencing accidents for the rest of his life, certainly for the rest of his career. But so what? He could take a joke. In fact, he'd be the one making a lot of the jokes. No, he just needed a little time to sort himself out. Shane headed for the kitchen and opened the pantry cupboard, though he knew what he'd find. He'd sort of exaggerated to Shiloh how well-stocked the kitchen was. Oh, there were plenty of canned goods if he didn't mind living on artichoke hearts, cream of mushroom soup, and raspberry jelly. Best thing to do was get his trip to the market over with. He'd stock up the fridge, maybe buy a bottle of decent booze. There was a liquor store right across from the market. Come back and have a nice, long nap. Yeah, that sounded good. Especially the nap part. That was a plan. And if there was one thing Shane liked, it was a well-laid plan. Bearing in mind that he had to carry everything he bought, Shane initially exercised restraint at the grocery market. He bought a steak, a couple of potatoes, a bag of salad. Then remembered he also needed essentials, like butter, half and half, bread, milk, eggs, and orange juice. At that point, he figured to hell with it, grabbed a couple of bottles of wine, a box of handcrafted chocolates, a pack of cheap and gaudy traditional Christmas crackers, and an evergreen tree the size of an undernourished houseplant. It was more, way more, than he was supposed to be carrying, but the thought of two trips was beyond him. What he needed was one of the golf carts everyone around here drove. Very few cars were allowed on Catalina, but he wasn't on the island often enough or long enough to justify the expense. Plus, in normal circumstances, he preferred walking. The rain had stopped as he staggered down Crescent Avenue, past the shop windows decorated with garlands and red bows, then up Clarissa Avenue, past the quaint little cottages trimmed with Christmas lights, wreaths on every other door, for rent signs in the windows of the rest. He was trying to decide if the wet soaking his t-shirt was perspiration or blood, and not caring much either way, so long as he could die on his own living room floor, when he noticed the vacationer from across the street was now outside, balancing on a ladder, in fact, as he strung red lights along the edge of the cottage roof. That seemed pretty industrious for a holiday renter, but some people took their Christmas very seriously. Not Shane. Which was to say, he liked the holidays fine, liked his family, and generally liked spending time with them over coma-inducing feasts, liked presents, even occasionally liked shopping for them. But he couldn't think of the last time he'd actually purchased a Christmas tree, not counting the potted plant currently squashed under his arm, or mailed a Christmas card. Most years he was too busy to remember to even open the ones he received. The guy on the ladder was clean-shaven and had brown hair, neatly cut. He was tall and muscular, a trim, powerful body, in faded jeans and a plaid flannel shirt. Shane was in physical distress, but he'd have to be dead not to notice a body that nice. He stopped panting like someone practicing his obscene phone call routine and tried to straighten up beneath his load of holiday goodies. The man on the ladder glanced around, spotted Shane, did a double take, and nearly fell.
"Whoa,"
Shane called.
"Need a hand?"
He hoped the answer was no, because attractive though this guy was, Shane needed to lie down very soon. His side really did hurt like hell, and he realized that between dragging his suitcase from the dock and hauling groceries from the market, he probably had overdone it. If he thought his family was nagging him now, it would be nothing to the symphony of shame he'd be subjected to if he landed back in the hospital.
No,
the guy in the black and blue flannel shirt said.
"No, thanks."
He wasn't looking at Shane, and his voice sounded muffled. Strange. Strange, but familiar. Shane went down the little walk to his cottage door, fumbled the door open, and dropped his groceries on the sofa. His hands were shaking. "You're crazy," he muttered to himself. After 2 years, he couldn't possibly remember what Norton's voice had sounded like. His heart was pounding so hard he felt sick. "He doesn't even look the same," he protested, but he went over to the window, twitched the blinds wide open, and stared out. From across the road, the man on the ladder was staring at Shane's cottage. He didn't look like Norton. The hair was wrong. Norton's hair had been a wild yellow bush. The build was... Norton had always worn baggy, loose clothing. Clogs, earrings, beads. But he had been tall and well-built, like the guy across the street. His face? It bothered Shane that he had difficulty remembering Norton's face, especially since he was trained to remember facial types. But whenever he tried to recall Norton's features, his memories were troublingly vague. Norton had looked like a lot of people. He had been attractive, but nothing in his attractiveness had really stuck out. He'd had a nice grin, and he'd made a lot of faces when he was joking around. Expressive. That was it. His eyes had been alert, his demeanor lively. His features had an almost malleable quality to them. The guy staring at Shane's cottage, in fact, he was probably watching Shane watch him, was still and unsmiling. Secretive? Or was Shane projecting? But, yeah, had Norton ever had an alarmed or disbelieving moment, that was likely the expression, or lack of expression, he'd have worn. Shane left the window and went outside. The man on the ladder observed him cross the road. There was no traffic, no golf carts, no pedestrians. Nobody out this misty gray morning but Shane and whoever this guy was. Shane came to a stop on the narrow sidewalk outside the white picket fence surrounding Norton's cottage. "Well," he said, "this is a surprise."
"Yeah?"
the man on the ladder said defensively.
"Is it?"
"Yep." The voice was definitely Norton's. "He looked pretty surprised to me a minute ago. What are you doing here?"
"I live here."
"No, you don't." The blue eyes. How had he forgotten Norton's eyes were a cold, clear blue? Hardened.
"Not all year, I don't. In the spring and summer, I rent the cottage out."
Shane heard it, but it didn't really register. He was busy with his own thoughts, struggling to contain the volcano of feelings threatening to erupt out of him. He felt peculiar, emotional. He was confused and angry, and he wasn't exactly sure why. Normally, he was controlled and rational. He liked that about himself. He believed it was what made him a good agent. a civilized man, a grown-up. But he did not feel controlled right now. He felt like his head was about to explode, like red-hot rocks were going to crack the roof of his skull and go flying, shattering nearby windows, perhaps. He said, "It is you, right? Norton?" If it wasn't Norton, it was his twin, or his doppelganger. The man in front of him didn't answer, seemed to be considering what he should say, and for some reason, that made Shane all the angrier. "I mean, I already know Norton isn't your actual name. That much I figured out a long time ago. It would be nice to know the rest of it." Nice wasn't exactly the word. Not Norton's eyes narrowed. "What is it you think you figured out? You're some kind of investigator. You were hired by the family or by the Bureau. I'm guessing the family. The Fallons. To investigate me."
"That's right," Not Norton said. "I worked for Metropolitan Mutual, the Fallons Insurance Company. And, as you know, I cleared you of all suspicion of wrongdoing, and you got your job back. So, you're welcome."
"Welcome?" stuttered Shane. "That's it? That's all you have to say to me?"
Not Norton frowned. "What would you like me to say to you?"
Un-fucking-believable. "For starters, what are you doing here? You didn't own this place 2 years ago."
"No, I didn't. I bought it last year."
"Why would you do that?"
Not Norton looked bewildered. "Why wouldn't I? I was looking around for a vacation place on the coast, and I like Catalina. I had a great time here that spring."
"A great time?"
Not Norton was getting more grim and guarded looking by the second.
It was surreal. No, it was whatever was more surreal than surreal. Fantastical? Hallucinatory? There had to be a word. It was confusing how much he looked like Norton, and how utterly and absolutely different he was.
"Look," Not Norton pressed on, "I'm not sure what the problem is. We had a nice thing a couple of years ago, right? Did I miss something? You got your job back. I helped you get your job back."
It was like they were from distant planets, and the home world hand gestures were just not the same. Not Norton seemed to feel he was making a peace sign, and Shane felt like he was getting an up yours, repeatedly, with greater and greater emphasis. It had to be due to recently getting out of the hospital or something like that, because Shane could feel himself growing more and more emotional and upset, which served to make him more emotional and upset. This wasn't like him. None of this was like him. He was behaving like, well, for sure not like Not Norton, who had enjoyed the nice thing a couple of years ago and never given him another thought. Which Shane already knew was obvious from the way things had ended. So, why the drama? He had accepted for years that the timing of Not Norton's leaving had not been a coincidence. Shane had worked it out a long time ago. Not Norton had to have been some kind of an investigator working for the Fallons. Or he actually was an international art thief, and he'd figured out what Shane did for a living. God, yes, as ridiculous as that second scenario had been, it had actually crossed Shane's mind a few times. In fact, in an unacknowledged corner of his heart, he'd preferred that scenario, because it meant Not Norton hadn't had a choice. It meant Shane hadn't just been a job. But Shane had been just another job. That was clear from the way Not Norton was eyeing him. Like, Shane was behaving in an unexpected and worrying way. Which made Shane feel foolish on top of whatever else he was feeling. Certainly embarrassed. Because here he was, yelling in the street about, well, getting dumped. 2 years ago. And since he was actually not that great at gracefully severing connections himself, this was probably poetic justice, or something equally awful. He pulled himself together and said coldly, "You're right. No problem on my side. Happy holidays." He turned, crossed the street, and went into his cottage. He closed the door very quietly, stared without recognition or interest at the groceries tumbled on the sofa, and turned to the window facing the street in time to see Not Norton drop his string of lights, swear, and climb down the ladder. Shane sat down and rested his head in his hands. He was still shaking, which, even if it was only adrenaline, was infuriating, and he took some deep, practiced breaths. And see, it was all total bullshit, because he remembered that moment when Not Norton had spotted him, recognized him, and nearly tumbled off his ladder. He had reacted to the unexpected sight of Shane with... Unfortunately, it was hard to tell what that reaction had been. Surprise, for sure. Also, probably alarm. At least, that was Shane's suspicion. Guilt. Yes. For sure, there had to have been guilt in that reaction, right? Because whatever Not Norton, what the fuck was his real name, said now, Shane was experienced enough to know that there had been something more than sex between them, or at least the potential for more than sex. He had believed so at the time, anyway. And even if there hadn't been, that was a really shitty way to treat someone. And on top of everything else, how the hell unprofessional to sleep with someone you were investigating? Who did that? Well, okay. Sometimes federal agents did that. People in the CIA did that. Undercover cops did that. But whoever and whatever that guy who wasn't really named Norton was, he should not have done that. Shane raised his head, turned back to the window, and watched his neighbor regain his perch on the ladder and begin stringing lights again. Red to match the cottage door. Cute. Festive. Asshole, he growled. Now, instead of having a nice, quiet, peaceful week to rest and recuperate, Shane was going to have to put up with this constant reminder, one of the most painful periods of his life. Silver ticked and splattered against the window pane. It was starting to rain again. The man across the street continued to thread the red string of lights through the little hooks along the edge of the cottage roof. Shane glowered. What kind of fool mixed rain and Christmas lights? Hey, great. Maybe the idiot could get his old Norton hairstyle back. Out of all the towns and villages on the coast, Not Norton had to pick Catalina to buy his vacation home. And like that wasn't enough. Had to pick the cottage right across the street from Shane? Come on. It was ridiculous. It was bullshit. And then, had the gall to act like Shane was the one behaving strangely? Who did Norton think he was kidding? Shane jumped up and headed back outside. He stood on his doorstep, stared at Norton still busily, industriously stringing his lights, although he threw a quick, guarded glance Shane's way. And then Shane marched down the stairs and crossed the little street yet again, although, really, the houses were close enough together. He could have just shouted, since he already was shouting, or close to shouting, as he picked up right about where they had left off 4 minutes earlier. You didn't think you owed me any kind of explanation? I mean, you could have left a note. Norton put down the lasso of lights and let out a long breath, like someone hanging on to his patience in the face of much provocation. You're still talking about 2 years ago? Yes, I am. You don't think that was kind of a lousy thing to do to someone? I had no idea what happened to you. Norton said, You're in the FBI. If you'd wanted to find out, I bet you could have without too much trouble. Yes, he could have. And yes, he had considered it. More than once. But it had been pretty clear that Norton had not been kidnapped, and Shane was not about to go chasing after someone who clearly didn't want to stay in touch. It seems pretty gutless to me.
Gutless?
Norton, God, stop calling him that, straightened sharply, and the latter wobbled.
That's what you think?
That's what I think. Shane felt a vicious, an entirely uncharacteristic wish for Norton to come charging down that ladder so he could have the satisfaction of smacking him in his arrogant kisser. That would be Shane smacking Norton, although it was probably going to be a two-way smackfest. In any case, after a dangerous moment, while Norton clearly considered the same scenario, he said,
"I guess if I cared what you think, I would have taken the time to say goodbye."
Well, that hurt. Unlike Shane, when Shane was his normal, reasonable self, Norton was not a guy who pulled his punches. But you know what? That was okay, because Shane did not need anyone pulling punches on his behalf. In fact, he was glad they'd had this little chat, because now it was all quite clear in his head. He had grieved. No, not grieved, but always held up those 13 days with the lover formerly known as Norton as some kind of gold standard for the relationships that followed. And now he realized his emotional economics system had been based, at best, on counterfeit money. Nice to get things resolved. However, despite his pleasure, he couldn't think of a damn thing to say that wouldn't sound like he had been gut-punched. He settled for a terse, "Whatever," turned, and walked straight into a golf cart.